That's right there.
White belly up.
This is the game. Yeah. It's a cat and mouse.
Smoked a turkey. Yes.
He is down. He is freaking down.
Said he shot an absolute giant.
Fall Obsession, baby.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another Fall Obsession podcast. I will be your host today, Nick Powell. I am the media production manager for Fall Obsession. And with me today, I have a couple of guests. Our CEO, Sam Thrash. What's up, Sam?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And then I have also our marketing manager, Drew Tordick. What's up, Drew?
Hey, how's it going, Nick?
It's going good. Glad to have you guys on here.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be here.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to talking about Montana some more.
Yeah, this is part two of our Montana series. So today we're going to do a little fast recap of the 2019 season. I know, Drew, you have a couple of good stories of some antelope that you've killed up there in Montana. And then I'm really looking forward to talking about what we're going to look forward to, hopefully, with pending draw results this year in Montana. So let's dive right in.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah, guys. So,
but before we do dive in,
well, cut me off, Nick. Why don't you? Just cut me off.
I'm sorry. See, I told you. I'm a terrible host.
No, you are not. 71% of our followers say otherwise. So.
Yeah, by the way, guys, thanks for voting on our poll there to the 71%. Thank you, guys, for the support to the 29%. I'm trying to do better.
Such a positive guy. Such a positive guy. Freaking love that guy, man.
But anyways, before we get started here, I got to give a shout out to our partners over there at Elite Archery. I know, Drew, you and Sam are both shooting the new 2020 Cure. How are you liking it?
Man, that 2020 Cure is sweet. I had a chance to shoot it in our most recent virtual archery hunt or archery contest that we're doing for our staff members. And that thing was sweet for somebody who has only been shooting a compound bow for what, a year now, not even. I thought I did pretty well, and I really enjoyed shooting. So I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that virtual archery tournament was a blast. I was shooting the Ritual 33, and man, that thing, I had it for, what, Sam, like 5 days before that tournament, and
yeah,
that thing was shooting like a dream, Nick. Just having it that short. So I think that's just a... That just goes to show how well Elite has done here in the last couple of years with their new bows that they've brought out.
Nick won't brag on the podcast, but he's the one who won the virtual archery tournament. So
I wasn't going to mention it, but yes. I had some good competition out there, though. They were making me sweat.
So in just a second, what these guys have said, guys, we can't say enough about our bows. And yeah. Nick and Drew are coming into the archery world with Elite and everything, with a year or two's experience bow hunting and stuff like that. Just to give you guys a different perspective, I've been bow hunting for many, many years, and I'm shooting the Cure, and it's probably one of the best bows that I've shot as well. So whether you're newer to bow hunting or you've been doing it for a while, the Cure is worth checking out. All the way around, it will work for an archer in any walk of archery, in my opinion. So be sure that you guys check them out, leadarchery.com. A lot of info on there for you guys, a lot of info on our pages regarding videos and how to's. Our Cure Your Obsession series is a good one to check out, and also go to your local dealer, shoot one, compare them to other bows, and see what you like. The only way you're going to be disappointed is if you recently bought a different bow. So
that's a great point. But I'm ready to dive in if you guys are. I know, Sam, you and Chester had an episode. I believe it was our first ever aired episode it was a 2019 Montana recap, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so, or I think it was just titled Montana Pronghorn, but it is episode one of our Fall Obsession podcast. Also the most downloaded podcast episode we've had to date, which is pretty cool. But, so last year last week, we recapped our 2018 hunt when Drew and I were up there hunting together. So if you guys haven't listened to that episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. It's a good precursor to what we're going to talk about today. But then last year, Chester Barnes, our good friend here at Fall Obsession, he joined us up there for a hunt with me and Drew, year number two. And so him and I recapped that trip in episode one. Probably going to be a few things that we mentioned that were mentioned back then in that episode. But for the most part, we're going to be getting kind of Drew's perspective of some stuff that we went through up there. We're going to talk about the difficulty and the hardships that we had compared to 2018, which is why I encourage you guys to listen to that episode first. And then, like Nick said, we're pending draw results. We're going back up again this year. So we're going to talk about our game plan kind of going up there. We're literally at the time of recording this podcast, tomorrow we find out the draw results. So we're pretty anxious about that. And then what we're going to do is, or what I'm going to send you, Nick, so that since you're the one that puts all this stuff together, at the end of this episode, after the exit music, I am going to have a recording of just myself telling you guys the results of the draw tomorrow. So be sure that you listen all the way to the end of the episode to find out if we really are going or if we're just blowing hot air here today. So, but anyway, Nick, you're hosting, so you're in charge. You have to tell me what you want me to talk about.
So I'm actually more curious to hear what Drew is going to say and his perspective about the 2019 Montana pronghorn hunt.
Well, fine. I will shut up.
So Drew, I know you and Sam went in 2018 and then Chester joined you guys in 2019. Was there anything, any cool stories, funny stories that you want to share with us of how you thought it went up there last year?
So man, that hunt with Chester was a lot of fun. Sam and Chester and myself were out there, and I got to tell you, I thought it was a little funny the first day when you guys wanted to take that little UTV of yours. And
oh my gosh, that was the worst idea in the history of the universe.
And we drove that thing 20 miles, 45 miles an hour to the spot. And three grown men squished into a little two-seater was – that's probably my highlight of the trip. but no, in all honesty, it was a great hunt. We had some really good opportunities at not only antelope but some sage grouse, which was a lot of fun as well. Yeah. I know last week we talked about while you were sitting in that ground blind, I was off scouting and found this honey hole, and so the following year, so 2019, we're out there and we go back to the private land, and I kid you not, there's not a sign of antelope on this property. No tracks, no droppings. It was a dead sea as far as the antelope go.
Wasn't there a new fence around it too, Drew? And that was part of what was causing that, you think?
I think that was definitely playing a factor into it. It also, to that point, it was warmer. Like we talked about last week, that spot gets really good once we get some snow. And it was a lot warmer this past year. And that new fence with that real low bottom wire, I don't think they had learned kind of the ins and outs and some of the new crossings that they're using now. And it made things challenging. There just weren't antelope there while we were there. And we just made the deciding factor after one day of kind of tromping around there and taking that UTV all the way out there and kind of not having options that first day, that we were going to go try something different the second day and really put some effort into some spot and stock out on public land. And I don't know how many of our viewers have had the opportunity to not only spot and stock antelope, but to try and do it on public land that's a challenge in and of itself. Those things have seen people, they've been hunted, they know what's going on, and it doesn't make the hunting easy, but it's a lot of fun still. And we had some really good opportunities. We had the chance to use the decoy, the flag decoy, and it ended up working really well for us. And we had some really close encounters. I know Chester got a shot at one. And, I mean, if you watch the video, it looked like he smoked that thing. It sounded good. We kept watching that antelope, waiting for it to die. And it just never did. It ran a long way. And as you don't see it in that video that we released, but we followed that thing for 7.5 miles. And
all day.
And a good portion of that was on foot, following not only just tracks, but it'd be every couple hundred yards there was a drop of blood here, a drop of blood there. And so we kept pushing it and kept walking. And it always felt like he was going to be just over that next ridge. And it wasn't until sunset, the last 15 minutes of shooting hours, that we finally caught up to where he had bedded down. And guys, that's what I was talking about in last week's podcast, was what a great shot Sam made, and the fact that thing was within sight of where he shot it. Those things cover some serious ground in a hurry. Yeah. What do they run, like 70 miles an hour top speed, 65, something like that. So start doing the math on that, and it doesn't take them long to get 7 miles.
Right.
Even hurt. So I know that looking back on that footage, that should have been a dead antelope all day. It somehow, that arrow made it through without killing that antelope, and I don't know how. They talk about no man's land, and I wouldn't even call that shot no man's land. We followed that antelope all day. We saw it again the next day. We saw it again, I think, the day after even, and you could see the blood spot on its side right where, I mean, it's not an ideal shot, but it's in the vitals.
Yeah,
right. And
those things are just tough. And guys, when I tell you we put every ounce of effort into trying to find that one goat and to try and put him down, that was our mission for 3 straight days.
Yeah,
it was a tough hunt. And I know we were all kind of emotionally drained from it. Nobody wants to see an animal injured. Nobody wants to have to chase one around, but we definitely put all of our energy into the recovery on that.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's all you really can do. And I think, I feel like it's really easy to underestimate how tough these animals really are. Because they can, I mean, first of all, they live out in the wild, which is crazy to think about for us. But to take a shot like that and then to survive is even crazier.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Sam, you're going to have to remind me. I don't remember exactly what episode of Fall Obsessed Outdoors that was, if it was 4 or what, but
it's chapter 4. Episode 1 is our 2019 Montana hunt. So everything that a majority of what we're talking about today, you guys can go check it out on our website and YouTube, on the Fall Obsessed Outdoors playlist. And side note, 2018 is chapter 3, the year before that. So you guys can watch that one as well. But yeah, I agree with you, Drew. It sucks. And we put everything we had. I mean, the whole day and then some was just towards trying to get that goat. And I don't know if you remember, but the next morning, even we started our day, where we had ended it the day before, where we had found where he had bedded, and it was super, super foggy that morning, and you could barely see anything, and somehow we found him briefly.
I do remember that, and I remember how we were trying to use the fog to our advantage to try and get into him. And it's like we've talked about, and we'll continue to talk about, those things on public land are really aware of human activity, especially once you step out of the truck. So he would hang out while we were in the truck, but the second one of us got out or somebody tried to make a move on him, he was gone.
Yeah, it truly is a game of cat and mouse, 100%. It's and a challenge like I've never had before. It had 2018 was a challenging hunt for me, more so than any deer hunting I'd done down here in Texas. And then 2019, the next year, just absolutely topped that. It is the hardest hunt I've been on a part of so far.
Yeah, and it's crazy how quickly things can do a complete 180. Because, I mean, if you go back and watch that video, we spotted him, saw him out on his own, kind of chasing another buck around, got ourselves behind a hill, parked the truck, got out, got the fan decoy out, and we topped the hill just enough to put the head of that fan decoy out. And like we talk about with these things, the curiosity, that thing came in to check us out, and it was broadsided, what, 43 yards, 42 yeah. yards, something like that. And I mean, Chester made a great shot. I don't want to say anything about his shooting in a negative light, because if you watch the footage, he made a great shot. If you pause and you kind of rewind and fast forward and you look at where he's aiming, his shot was dead on the money, heart shot all day long. That antelope ducked the string, saw that arrow coming in, and dropped just enough that arrow hit high and a little bit back. But if you look at where the arrow hit and kind of move it around, that should have been a dead antelope if he didn't see that arrow coming in. And I just remember watching him shoot it, and the first thing I did was pat him on the shoulder, because I thought for sure that thing was going to die.
Oh, yeah. We all reacted based on the sound of that arrow hitting him. And me too. You see the camera, like, move around real quick and kind of go off to the side a little bit, because I'm over there grabbing him and hugging him too, because, we thought we just killed an antelope, you know?
Yeah, and, I mean, I was pumped because that was going to be our first antelope kill with that flag decoy, and I'd seen some videos on it before and tried it a couple of times, but never had one come in like that. Like, that guy came in looking for a fight, and Chester hit him right where he should have, and that it just bad luck, and sometimes things like that happen when you're hunting.
Yeah, and that whole story, the what turned out to be a not ideal shot with him ducking, and just a tough animal, and then us trying to track him down and spending all that time trying to finish what we started. That's not something that a lot of the guys like to share. That's not a story that guys like to tell. That's not a story a lot of people tell on a podcast or on a hunting video or stuff like that. But I think it builds character for us, and it also could benefit somebody else out there later on by hearing that story. And it also kind of helps bring us back down to earth, because as we've mentioned just throughout the episodes and the weeks that we've been doing this podcast, we're not celebrities, we're not anything special, we're everyday hunters like you guys, and we deal with this stuff the same as y'all. So you haven't hunted if you hadn't missed, and you hadn't hunted if you've hadn't lost an animal, is what I say. So
yeah, and I think that's the other thing too, is I think talking about it, I think no fault as to the way the video was edited the first time, I think we just didn't get the shots to edit it in a different way, because we were so focused on trying to make the recovery that we just didn't get a lot of shots of tracking that blood trail and the slow process that it was, yeah, trying to follow that blood and that sage on gravel. And man, if you want to find some difficult tracking conditions, go try and track an antelope in sagebrush with gravel. it's almost impossible to find blood, and it's a good thing we had eyes on that thing the whole time and kind of knew the general direction he was going and what path he had taken. And it was challenging, but I think it's good for our viewers to know that we're not out there just shooting antelope and then it doesn't die, so then, oh well, we're on to the next one. We put every effort into making that recovery that we could.
Yeah.
And there were definitely other antelope that we could have made a move on and tried for, but we were committed to go and finish that one off.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, take this conversation somewhere not so dark and depressing.
All right, I will. Because you guys talking about how challenging both of these years have been are really making me look forward to this year.
Nick's like, I'm regretting it. I hope I don't get drawn. I'm regretting it.
No. In all honesty, I'm really excited and looking forward to getting out there. And like you said at the beginning, we are awaiting draw results, so the anxiety is real. But I would like to talk about a little bit about what we have to look forward to, and what are some, because it like you said, this is my first time, so I'm not sure what to expect. Luckily, I've seen videos and stuff from you guys going up there, but that's really all I have to go off of. So what are some things that I can expect to run into, I guess, because I know we had a video that was released called the in our Untold Story series of the 1 mile crawl. And so I know, Sam, you have some fond memories of that.
Oh man, the 1 mile crawl was it was a long crawl. mean, that's what it was. I mean, this
around a mile.
The story is not very eventful. It was the last day, and we spotted this group of bucks out by this watering hole, and they were on the other side of this big open plain and like a long way out there, and it looked like we had a little draw, a little low spot that could get us out there pretty close, and looked it up on the Onyx maps and decided we were going to make a move. So Chester hung back because we were just trying to decrease our footprint out there, because right, you know, a hunter, a guide, and a cameraman is a lot wandering around out there sometimes. So just me and Drew started sneaking out there, and what started as a little draw, a low spot, turned into a shadow, basically. Like there was nothing out there for us. There was no cover. So Drew and I are crawling on our hands and knees and our bellies for like an hour and a half trying to get close enough to these goats. And for a little bit there toward the end, it looked like it might actually work, because we got within, I think the closest range Drew got was like 144 yards. And then all it took was the wind swirling once, and they were out of there, and our whole stalk was blown. We looked back at the truck, and we're like, man, that really is a long way. So we dropped a pin where we were, and then we walked back to the truck and took a look at how far it was, and I guess it was right about a mile, wasn't it, Drew?
Yeah, I think it was actually a little over a mile.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was, had that wind not swirled, I think we were, so like you had said, it went to a shadow at one point, but it was almost getting better again, because
yeah,
we had options. We could have gone left or right. They've kind of wide there, and we were in a really good place to make a move on those. And you know, sometimes the things just happen and the wind swirled at the wrong time, and that's all it took, and they were gone. And it did not take them long to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, they were gone, and in the next county within a minute. And it just put in perspective how much we work for so little, and then how quickly everything can change, and we're standing there with nothing in front of us. So,
yeah.
Nick, you're wanting to know about advice. Bring some knee pads, because I was pulling cactus out of my knee for 2 weeks after that stalk.
All right, so Drew, should I bring some like painter's knee pads with some plastic on them, or like some volleyball knee pads with some cushion? What do you suggest?
Well, I mean, if you're gonna wear the plastic ones, I'd wear them underneath your pants, so make sure they fit. The soft volleyball ones might not be a bad idea, but that's some pretty rugged terrain, and they're not gonna be in great shape when you're done crawling through there.
Sounds good.
I know the preferred method, or not method, but sort of some preferred clothing for that option is Sitka makes a really nice pair of pants that's got those built-in knee pads, and it's got some pretty tough material, and that really does help hold those cactus at bay.
Okay. And,
yeah, so definitely worth the money there. The other thing I would say on that, Sam, that I don't know if we've talked about this much, but we got in close enough to notice that it was actually a bachelor group. Yeah. I can't, it was five or six of them there.
Yeah. I think there was five, and when we started, like when we started, we could, from the distance, we could tell there was at least one buck in the group, but it wasn't until we got right up there pretty close, within a couple hundred yards, that we realized that it was all bucks. Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually, one thing that we haven't talked about, and I don't even know if it made it in the footage of that, but one of those bucks was actually the one that Chester shot, and that was, what, 4 days later, 5 days later?
Yeah, he shot that buck, I think, on day two, and that was the last day. That was day number six. That was the last stalk, the last ditched effort to try and do something before we hung it up. And, yeah, that was 4 days later.
Yeah, and that wasn't something that we could see from the distance, but it was a coincidence. It was a few miles from where we had lost him last, and I guess the only way we could really tell it was him was that red spot on his side. And guys, that thing moved like every other buck in that group. It was not limping. It wasn't slow. It was I don't want to say unharmed because he was bleeding, but it was amazing to see how quick that antelope could move.
Yeah, he was keeping up with the rest of them just fine. So it was encouraging for sure.
So you said there was pretty good distance between you and the antelope that you couldn't even tell they were bucks or not. What kind of distances are you talking about?
Oh, bro, 1 mile. Like, from where we started to the water hole, like Drew said, over a mile. Like, that we're trying to glass and look, and at that distance,
gotcha,
we could only make out one. Just with their position and how they were bedded and everything, we could only make out one that we knew was a buck. And at that, I mean, our tags were for either sex, so it didn't really matter. But at that point, like, we were running out of options, so we had to try.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So some good binoculars would be a good piece of equipment to take this year.
Yeah. Getting back to what you're asking with, you know, stuff to prepare for. Knee pads are in all seriousness, not a bad idea. Good glass is another thing. You want to be prepared for both warm and colder weather out there. Obviously, the last 2 years we've dealt with snow both years. And then above all, man, footwear. Because we covered some miles on foot during that week for sure. Drew can probably give some more feedback on that too.
Yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of miles, but I guess going back to what you're saying, that getting good glass is huge. This year, after kind of what we'd done last year, I made the decision to order one of those Vortex spotting scopes and one of the high power ones too. Just it's having binoculars is nice, but having that spotting scope sitting on a tripod and having that really still view when you're looking at something that's, from where we saw it, Sam, where we saw that bachelor group, I know it was over 2 miles that we spotted them.
And yeah, because we drove down a little bit farther to get in a better spot to start our stalk. So you're right.
Did y'all spend a lot of time glassing?
Where we hunt, it's down there on the public land. It's sage grass flats, and so it's actually really easy to see them from a distance. That white sticks out pretty good on the green.
Gotcha.
It's trying to get into them with knee-high cover is always a challenge.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
There's also some pretty significant hills out there that if you get up on top of them, you can see a long, long ways. And like we were able to spot groups of pronghorn out there on the flats and some of the draws from on top of those hills, but from that distance, being able to tell if they were bucks, does, or what they were, it was impossible at that distance.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And then I think you might have mentioned it in part one of this series, of this podcast series, that you were able to use the terrain in those hills to get a little bit closer instead of having to actually crawl the entire way, the entire 2 miles or whatever it was, to get close to them.
Yes. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about in part two here about 2019, was the difference in terrain between the private piece of land that we were hunting on in 2018 versus having to go to public BLM land in 2019 is we had a lot more hills. We had a lot more, or I should say, shorter draws and stuff, and deeper draws that we could use more tactically to our advantage in 2018. Whereas public land, like Drew said, there are a bunch of antelope out there, but it's so flat. Like, and I know we're talking about, you know, draws and shadows and hills, but the majority of the time, it's so flat that spot and stalk is very difficult, and it's hard to get within bow range. And I'm a bow hunter through and through, and if we get drawn, I'm going to be going back up there this year with the intention of killing one with my bow. But one reason that I didn't put in, like I had the last 2 years, for the archery only tag, why I told you not to put in for the archery only tag, Nick, is to give us that option to kill one with a rifle.
Right.
Because of those challenges, and because Texas to Montana and back again is a long commute to come home empty-handed.
Absolutely.
So as much as I want to kill another one with a bow and I don't want to touch a rifle, if that's what it comes down to, then that's what we're going to do, because the terrain and being flat and everything out there, it can make it challenging for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it's flat, but it's also, after we got out and we did some hiking, the other thing is you got to be able to cover a lot more ground when we're hunting that flat BLM stuff, because sometimes in order to get to these antelope, the best way to do it is to walk completely away from them and circle around and get into a spot where you can get into one of those really low gullies. And when I say low gullies, I'm talking 6 feet deep at the deepest, like you're just below eye line, and using whatever terrain is there to get in close. And I know after hiking around out there some after our hunt out there, that there is a possibility to get out there and really use that terrain. But again, it's one of those things where you kind of have to hunt it a few times to learn how some of those draws connect and what the right way to get to certain areas is, because otherwise you're going to be out there and you're going to inadvertently bust yourself crossing over a spot where you shouldn't, where you're all of a sudden visible to everybody on the flat.
There's also situations where you might have more than one group. You might have a group on kind of in front of you and a group that's kind of traveling with them, if you will, but they're somewhat separate off to the side, and that makes it even more difficult when you're having to watch your move from two different directions and you can only go after one, you know. So
gotcha. Well, all this talking about it's making me more excited. I know that much.
You're gonna get up there, man, you're gonna be like, I can't believe y'all talked me into this. This freaking sucks.
I'm sure I'll think that just the opposite.
Just watch. You're probably gonna kill one first stalk, and Drew and I are gonna be struggling the rest of the week, and you're gonna be like, I don't know what y'all's problem is. This is easy.
Easy cake. Well, I feel like I'm definitely a little bit more prepared than I was before this podcast. You guys have anything else you want to add?
Man, it's cat and mouse, and I know we could talk about stories from there. We could talk about our experiences. We could talk about our frustrations, our disappointments, and the stuff we enjoy and look forward to. We could talk about that stuff all day long and make a couple hours worth out of it, but obviously we don't have that time and it would be pretty repetitive, but it is as a guy coming from a bow hunter down in Texas, a whitetail hunter, and going up there and trying something new like that, it challenges you. It can discourage you if you let it, but if you take it constructively and you learn from it, it can build you into not only a better bow hunter, but a better hunter and outdoorsman in general, in my opinion. Being able to experience stuff like that and being able to do that kind of stuff, it's what improves us, in my opinion, and makes us better. So last year we were unsuccessful, but I think we were the better for it, or at least I was. I'll speak for myself, because I learned a lot, and it's going to benefit me down the road, in my opinion. Which reminds me, Drew, one thing we were going to talk about after Chester and I left a month or two later, you actually did kill a couple. We wanted to hear that story.
Yeah. I was thinking about that as you were talking, Sam, and I was like, wait, we're not done yet.
We're not done yet.
Yeah, and so I know we've been pretty doom and gloom about how tough it is to kill antelope, but it's not always the case. This year I was out on an elk hunt, and I went to a new mountain range, as I'm sure I've talked about in some videos, and I went later in the season this year. I think it was November when I was out there, and so it was a little past the rut, and things had been hunted, and I was, in all honesty, a little frustrated with how elk hunting had been going. It had rained, and the snow was as loud as you could imagine, and elk hunting was kind of a no-go. And in a moment of frustration with elk hunting, I made the two-hour drive from elk camp down to go antelope hunt for the day. And I remember leaving elk camp, and those guys thought I was crazy. And I said, no, I'm gonna go kill my antelope and fill my tags today, and I'll be back.
And so ambitious.
I know.
Right?
Dang.
And those guys laughed at me, and I was laughing at myself too, but I honestly was just done hunting in that crunchy snow and needed a break. And I pulled up right to the property that we've talked about, that private property that we had hunted a month and a half before and not seen any sign. And it had snowed, and I was just going to sort of test the theory that once it snows, that spot is good. And if it didn't work out, then I was going to go check out the BLM. And I'm not kidding, guys. I got out of the truck. I walked downwind to the downwind corner of the property, walked up my first hill, and 100 yards away was a buck and a doe.
Jeez.
I think I was hunting for all of maybe 15 minutes and shot the biggest antelope of my life. And after I shot the buck, then the doe stood there and looked at me. And since I had a B tag, I shot that one as well. And so
that's crazy.
Within 15 minutes, I had two antelope on the ground. And later that afternoon, I was butchering antelope. And the next day, I was back at elk camp with antelope in the freezer.
Wow.
Man, I mean, that's a wild story in itself. But I just have to point out the fact that you were able to leave elk camp where you're hunting elk and just go hunt antelope like a couple hours away.
Yeah.
That just seems crazy to me because down here in Texas, we don't have, a whole lot of public land to go to, or BLM land to go to. And so it's like either it's private, or if you don't have private that you own, then you have to pay for it. And so I think that's just crazy to wrap my head around. You were at elk camp, and then you just leave. You're like, I'm going to go fill some antelope tags today. And then you just went and put two on the ground in 20 minutes.
It'll blow your mind too, Nick, that a lot of the times when we're out there hunting antelope, or at least the last 2 years, that we see quite a few whitetail and mule deer out there too while we're out there wandering around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know the one you guys saw from the ground blind last year was a nice one.
Okay, Drew. So
what's that?
Okay, so that was a joke.
What?
Okay, you gotta let me and the rest of us in on this joke. Oh, I guess Drew's not in on the joke either.
No, I'm not. So I'm out and not with these guys because they wanted to sit. And I thought I'd do some more, some scouting and see if I couldn't find something else. And I get a text on my phone, and it's, look at this mule deer that was 35 yards away. And it's just a monster.
So
Was that off Google?
So Chester and I were in a ground blind for 11 hours that day. And when you're in a ground blind for 11 hours, you get pretty bored. I'm just saying. So we're in this ground blind, and there's all these tracks around the watering hole, but we're not seeing anything, obviously. I don't remember even remember what time of day we did this at, but we were throwing around the idea of, well, I guess they could have been mule deer. You know, we don't know. Maybe they're a pronghorn. Maybe they're mule deer. Maybe we're sitting here in vain. And so Chester starts thinking, I'll throw him under the bus since he's not in this conversation. even though I don't really remember whose idea it was, but one of us had the idea to mess with Drew and tell him that we had a stud mule deer there, because Drew, as we mentioned in previous podcasts, he has a pocket full of tags every year. So I'm sure he had a mule deer tag up his sleeve that he would have been willing to fill. So I got on the Google and I found me a picture of a stud mule deer that was running that kind of matched the terrain that was behind us, and I sent it to Drew.
That's awesome.
And so I send that to Drew, and Drew comes and picks us up after dark, and we get in the truck, and Drew starts talking about how he's going to have to go back there and try to kill that buck. And Chester looked at me, and we kind of chuckled. And later that night, we're like, should we tell him? And Chester's like, we'll tell him before we leave here, before we go home back to Texas. And we never did. So I am sorry, Drew. I did not realize that we hadn't told you that. And I think it's hilarious that it's coming out on a podcast, but... I'm sorry, buddy. I hope you didn't waste too much time over that.
I was going to say, Drew, did you actually go back to that blind and sit?
Hey, you want to know something funny? Well, I mean, there's two kind of funny things about that. So on our way out, I don't know if it was that night or the next night, out of the BLM land, we almost hit one of the biggest whitetail bucks I've ever seen out there with the truck.
That is true.
And so they're around, and I mean... You guys might have been joking, but I went back to that spot, not exactly where you were sitting, but I was within a mile and a half of where you guys were sitting, which on that BLM flat is no distance at all. And I found a really nice mule deer buck, and it was the very last day of season, and I was not even deer hunting at that point because I had... I filled my tag the day before because it was the second to last day and I didn't have a lot of time to hunt left. And I figured, you know what, some meat in the freezer is fine. And so I just shot a really nice doe and put my tag on that. And the next day, sure enough, I had the biggest mule deer I've ever seen at 200 yards for 45 minutes. And I sat there and watched him.
Oh, wow.
Dang,
you want to talk about regret and the thoughts that go through your head. And man, it was awesome to sit and watch him. And I know where I'm going to look for him this year. And that was a really nice nice mule deer. It was a real solid 4x4, and it had kickers off of pretty much everywhere. And
dang,
I would have not hesitated to shoot that had I had a tag in my pocket.
Dang. Well, sounds like a stud.
I'm glad that we were able to point you in the right direction then.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm sorry that you're just now finding out on the podcast. I thought we told you before we left.
No, that's fine. And you know what? That's the great part about where we hunt out there is we haven't even really talked about this, and I don't know if any of the footage you ever made it into any of the videos, but while we were antelope hunting, we came across a herd of elk down on the sagegrass flats. And
yeah,
I had an elk, I had an elk tag in my pocket. And listen, guys, had I had my new cure that I have this year, I would have been all over that in a second because they were right there. And it was archery only at that time. and it's also just the zone and the way the tags work out there that it's either sex for archery, but it's not for rifle season. And so I think we counted four or five really, really nice bulls. I know one of them was a 7x7, and that thing was amazing.
I was going to say, we're talking about in the high 300s for score on these bulls, at least. Like, these are no joke stud bulls that any hunter would be willing to take.
Yeah, and we were 200 yards away from them, yeah. If that. And they were just in there just bugling and fighting and chasing each other around. And if it would have been this year, we would have been in there calling right on the edge of that property of the private and the BLM, and we would have been trying some bugling and trying some calling to try and get them across that boundary. Because that was a great time.
Well, all right, I'm being a bad host, and I'll get us back on track here.
Come on, Nick, quit being a 29%er.
I'm trying. So, Drew, I know you said that recently, or not recently, but you've only been pronghorn hunting the last, like, what, 3 or 4 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So, is there anything over that span of time that, like, any type of equipment, anything that you have gone out there and wish you had, and then later said, well, yeah, I should have brought this or I should have brought that. Is there any certain type of equipment that you can think of off the top of your head that you would take with you that you hadn't previously?
Yeah, I made the decision this year to buy a spotting scope, just based on last year and how we could sit at the top of the hill and see the groups and not be able to tell what was there and not really pick apart which group was worth going after. So I did invest in that, and that's great also for elk hunting, spot and stock out in Montana as well. So that's something I'll be carrying this year. The other thing is getting a rifle that can shoot out a ways. It's not uncommon to take shots that are, you know, I mean, 150 yards is a close shot on an antelope a lot of the times with that rifle. So to be able to shoot at a distance would be one thing. So finding a really nice gun with a really nice glass on it. I really like the one that I picked up. And I guess the other thing, you mentioned knee pads. Those would be really nice to have for that mile-long crawl. But I think just having the right gear. I know when we went with Chester, being from Texas, he was cold. And it wasn't like he wasn't that he was just wearing shorts and a t-shirt thinking it was going to be warm. He was bundled up. But, you know, finding the right gear that really keeps you warm is really advantageous, because being comfortable when you're hunting, it makes it a lot easier to hunt all day.
Gotcha. That's a good point. So, Sam, I know you've been a couple of years now. Do you have anything that Drew hasn't said that you would take with you that you hadn't?
I don't think that there's anything that hadn't been mentioned at one point. I will second everything that Drew said. And the other thing, a couple things that I'll touch on again, I'll mention footwear. I know my boots the last 2 years haven't been ideal. They've worked, but they haven't been probably the best choice for that kind of hunting. So I'm definitely going to be trying to bring another different pair of boots up with me this year. And the other thing I would say from a bow hunter standpoint is practice with and find a pair of gloves that you can shoot with, that you can still get consistent anchor points with, and that and get comfortable and get familiar with what it feels like to shoot with gloves. Because if you're bow hunting up there and it's cold, chances are you're going to have gloves on. And maybe if you're shooting, more than likely you're going to prefer a thinner pair of gloves to actually shoot with. So you might also play around with some setups to where you got two pairs of gloves on. Basically, you got a warmer pair for when you're out there, you're walking around, or commuting. And then once you actually start getting a stalk, you can peel those off and go with your thinner, lighter ones that you're comfortable shooting with, if that makes sense. So that's another, that's another thing I would definitely think about from the bow hunting standpoint, or maybe even the firearm standpoint too, with a trigger finger, you know, but, have a pair of gloves that you're comfortable shooting with on your hands. So,
yeah,
that's good stuff.
I'll even throw one extra in there, and that's where we're hunting. There's sage grouse, so throw a bird arrow in your quiver. You know, one you don't mind shooting at the ground and messing up. I know Chester got a really nice sage grouse, and he was a little frustrated at wrecking that brand new slick trick shooting it into the ground. So.
Yeah, we didn't have the ideal broadhead set up for that. He made it work, but you know, get you a solid broadhead on there. I'm sure Andy Meeks might have some recommendations.
Oh yeah, I think he probably does. Well, guys, I definitely feel more prepared going into this year's hunt. And I appreciate you guys sharing your wisdom, even though y'all may not think it's very much wisdom. It's more than I have, and I know there's a lot of guys out there that could put it to use as well as I will. So I just want to thank you guys for coming on here and sharing your thoughts with me. Do you have any final thoughts at all?
Man, one thing I want to mention, just as we start going up there, as we get closer to this trip, and of course during the trip, one thing that at least Nick and I have discussed, and one thing we plan on doing, is we're going to be podcasting our way through it. So once we start getting into the fall, we'll probably be dishing out, kind of like we did here with a part one and part two, we'll probably have a several week long series in our Fall Obsession podcast over our Montana trip, because when we get back to the lodge after a long day of hunting, you know, we're cooking a good meal, we're sitting down, we're decompressing, and that's a perfect time to set some mics up and kind of recap the day, you know, while it's fresh on the mind. So I fully expect us to take advantage of that while we're up there and knock out some podcast episodes for our listeners straight from the field.
Heck yeah. I'm freaking stoked for it.
Yeah. I guess I got one more thing, and that's, we mentioned field staffer Andy Meeks, and, you know, he happened to draw a Montana archery tag, and he made the decision not to come hunt with us. So all I got to say to him is that, you know, he better
shoot,
and he better get it on video, because he's missing out on hunting with us.
That's right. I agree.
So
I was talking to him, because he has a release that I'm wanting to try out. And so he was kind enough to stick it in the mail for me. And I asked him, I said, are you going to hopefully come hunt with us in Montana? And he did say that if he's not successful when he goes, he's gonna sneak up there with us. So I kind of hope he's unsuccessful when he is when he goes up there to hunt himself. But if he is successful, then I'll be happy for him.
Still, come hang out with us, Andy. Come on, man.
Yeah, come on, Andy.
Yeah, we can't trash talk him too bad. I know I'm gonna be out there in the backcountry at the same time he's antelope hunting, and he's already committed to if we get some bulls down in the backcountry, he's going to come help us pack them out if he's close and if he's already got one down. So,
heck yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, all right, guys, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I just want to thank our listeners for hanging in there with us while we ramble on about Montana. Hopefully you guys took away something from it. Hopefully you guys learned something. I know I did. If you haven't already, go follow us on Facebook and Instagram and check out this podcast. We have, I think this is, I don't know, we're in the 20s now, 20 something episodes. So we got a lot of good content for you guys to listen to. If you have any suggestions on any podcasts that you guys want to hear, we may not know much about that topic, but I guarantee you, we know somebody who does. And so if you guys want to give us some suggestions on what we can talk about, there's a place on our website. It's fallobsession.com/podcast. There's a place at the bottom where you can go out and fill out a suggestion form. It'll come right to us. If you guys have any questions or anything like that, you can go on any of our social media pages and reach out. But please don't hesitate to reach out. Drew, Sam, thank you guys for being here.
You bet.
Did I miss anything?
Yeah, it was a good time.
All right, guys. With that, we'll shut her down.
All right.
Thank you guys again.
Sorry.
One more thing.
I'm going to interrupt you now because you interrupted me at the beginning.
Fine.
Again, be sure that you guys listen till after the music stops at the end of this episode, because I'm going to put something in there and tell you guys if we got drawn or not. So be sure you listen to the end.
Anything else, Sam?
I'm done now, man.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next Ball Obsession podcast. See you later.
Catch you later. Hey guys, Sam here again. Wanted to give you guys a quick rundown on the results of our 2020 Montana draw. As we said we would do in the episode, like we mentioned before, we would much rather have recorded the last 2 weeks' episodes after we found out the draw results, but due to our schedules and how recording times worked out, we were unfortunately unable to do that. The draw really was not quite as we had hoped, unfortunately. Despite my being drawn the last 2 years for Montana, it is not going to be a third for me. I was unsuccessful in obtaining my antelope tag. Nick Powell, who put in for his for the very first time this year, he was also unsuccessful, so looks like Nick and I are going to be sticking to some deer hunting this upcoming fall. No pronghorn for us this year. And Drew, he was successful in drawing his antelope A tag. However, he did not get his antelope B tag. So Drew's at least going to hopefully get one on the ground this year, and hopefully somebody's going to be able to be up there with him to document, but don't know if that's going to be Nick or I. So thank you guys for tuning in. Wish that we could have been giving you guys some better results, but I hope that you guys at least got something out of these last 2 weeks' worth of episodes. Hope that it was enjoyable for you guys and you took something away from it. So thanks for listening.